everyone, and welcome once again to Royal Grown Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Michael Beck. I'm joined by my co-host, as always, Mr. Rick Elliott.
Hello, hello.
And today we have a very special guest and longtime friend who's been a major part of this industry for a very, very long time. Huge influence on the nutrient scene, the way hydroponic stores, as they're currently known, evolved. Is very heavily influenced by this group of people out of Canada who have been doing amazing work building nutrients, building stores, building the culture around cannabis and cultivation in Canada for a very long time. I'd like to welcome Justin Cooper to the show. Thanks.
Hey, guys.
Hey, what's up?
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here.
You know, you've been a longtime friend and one of my larger influences in this sphere. One of the first people I met when I really hit the ground as a rep in the hydro industry, and I was told, oh, wait till you meet Justin. He's a legend. Wait till you meet these guys up at Green Planet. They're legends. And through the last decade, we've shared a lot of great times and good stories, and I agree, legendary stuff. But we haven't had an opportunity to like dig into the past and how you guys got to the point where Green Planet was this legendary thing and the Pacific Northwest Garden Supply stores were these kind of pinnacle mecca of hydroponic stores, definitely in Canada, but I know tons of US garden stores who are like, oh yeah, we modeled after PNW. So like, tell us a little bit about your past and like, how did you end up running garden stores in Canada in like the late 90s?
It's crazy, right? I was born in an area called Surrey, British Columbia. And I mean, I don't know if my reputation precedes me like legendary, but I mean, it just so happened we grew up, and I was fortunate enough to grow up in a space that was basically the epicenter of BC Bud. At the time, we didn't know it. At the time, we were just like, holy shit, people are using a lot of fertilizer and a lot of lights for growing tomatoes. Because, I mean, literally, you'd walk in a shop and you mentioned the word cannabis or anything of the sort, we'd be like, listen, I don't want to conspire to cultivate cannabis. We're avoiding getting charged. We know DEA's up here. We know they're heavily monitoring the way we behave. And, you know, we're young kids, but we're making sure we're doing things right. Not to say that we didn't have a past, and this is the way all my friends from high school put gas in their tank, including myself, right? But we had to be super careful in those days. And, you know, we didn't really jump on the scene and bang our drum for cannabis. We knew where it was going. We knew how it was done. I was pro-cannabis, but we had to be super cautious because we knew we were under the microscope. We knew that BC was the epicenter of where a lot of bee starts were coming from. Yeah. And they were flooding the U.S. market, and we got to see massive amounts of U.S. cash early 90s, and we were busy as shit. you know, my business partner, the founder of Pacific West, my co-founder of Green Planet. We've been in business together, you know, 28 years.
Wow.
All right. And a dear friend of mine, and we've, you know, we hustled. The early 90s, we hustled. We ran and, you know, literally pallets upon pallets of gear, you know, and just loading trucks. Like, you know, it was highly competitive. Very aggressive time, and a lot of what we built collectively were employees having an opportunity to own a store, and we built the company from within. And I found that making other people successful was the secret to our sauce. It was the secret to our success. It was, you know, when you pour yourself into others, that's the one thing about the cannabis space. Was I love it because it was an opportunity for people to have a chance to succeed.
And that resonates so deeply in the cannabis industry. The fact that you've been business partners for 28 years through all the deep, deep hustle shows me, you know, shout out to Fat Bowl, that you guys are hustling with integrity. We actually had the opportunity of stumbling into the Fat Bowl store today and talking about that term. So I thought it's funny how that kind of just came together. But that's really what, to me, the cannabis industry was, especially in the early days when we had to be so careful, below the border, above the border, it was all illegal everywhere, and we all had to be cautious. But we all knew what was going on.
And in the early 90s, you're saying, you know, or even, you know, anywhere really in the 90s, when you're talking about the cannabis cultivating retail, you know, idea, that there was a few in the United States in the lower 48.
Yeah.
And they're legendary stores, and there's one in LA, one in Berkeley, you know, one up in Seattle. You know, but for the average listener, you know, they probably have no idea that most of the companies that are around now that they're familiar with weren't around in the 90s. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think even Fox Farm started sometime in mid 90s. You know, Sunlight Supply was mid 90s.
I mean, it was GH. That's right. It. General Hydroponics. I mean, Larry was a mentor of mine. I looked at Larry and I, early days, wanted to emulate his behavior. You know, and if you ask Larry point blank, you know, what was the spark that started it? He would literally say Pacific Northwest Garden Supply. Like, we sold and put GH on the map in BC. I can confidently say we worked really hard. Pure Blend, same thing.
Yeah.
Treg, you know, these brands that now exist globally. You know, we were the first to bring Canada to North America. We have a lot of firsts within the space, and that's because we visited lighting trade shows. We went all over the map trying to find and source unique products that would work within our space. Because our space is, you know, you got to be a plumber, electrician, a horticulturist. Yep. You know, there's lots of different areas. And early days was piecing together gardens with passion and as much technical know-how as you could have.
On the down
low. We were sponges. We were sponges for everything and anything. Tied to hydroponics.
Being weary of where you bought your supplies.
Oh,
mostly
yeah.
Constructing at the wee hours of the night to keep the trail.
No kidding,
of what
right?
You're doing, yeah.
Like, they grow plants, we grow customers. We've always been grower first, right?
Which is amazing. It was the infancy of an industry at that time too. There were only so many things that even really applied to those customers, and you had to look to diversify that product offering. You had
totally.
To really dig.
Yeah, even Royal Gold, here's a plug. I sourced Royal Gold because I knew it was in Humboldt. I knew the carbon footprint was better than shipping bagged nutrients over the ocean or bagged cocoa over the ocean. Mm-hmm. I knew it was a Humboldt original. I was happy to say it's manufactured and processed in North America. And most importantly, I knew it worked. I liked the fiber of the cocoa you guys were using. I liked the product, I liked the branding, I liked the company, I liked what you stood for. And because of that, it had to be in our lineup of offering. Because at Green Planet, we've cherry-picked the industry with the grower-first mentality. I tried the product, I ran the product. You know, when Terpinator came on the scene from Dennis, he's like, try it, you'll like it. And I was like, I have to have that. Like, we're literally, when products were found, we don't, hey, that worked, it didn't work. If we tried it, we liked it, we brought it to market, and we pumped the hell out of it because we knew it delivered what it said it did. And that was really important to us.
There's definitely something to say about the, you know, made for growers concept and idea.
Yeah.
You know, we talk to our customers all the time about, you know, the standard that we're held to living in a place like Humboldt County, the Emerald Triangle. Like, you can't put out bad product here, you'll get hung for it.
Totally.
You know, it's important. These are our customers, are our friends, our family, our cousins, nieces, neighbors, you know. It's very, very important to keep that integrity.
Well, and luckily for us, we were able to work through that environment, and we made mistakes as Royal Gold, you know. Like, you're building soil, you're evolving, you're creating product lines, and part of that is working with the community to make sure you don't keep making the same mistakes, or if you make a mistake, you handle it with integrity once again. You're like, hey, we have data. This is what happened. This is what you're saying happened in your data. Let's figure it out and meet in the middle and we'll take care of you. And
totally.
You know, that allowed us to evolve the product to the point where it is. And we don't have those issues anymore because we have a lab and we have the data and we've learned from those mistakes. But I remember those first conversations with you when you wanted to bring Royal Gold on and you were so passionate about it that it was contagious to me. I was like, yeah, This is, yeah, we're North America. We're doing it in Humboldt. Yeah. And it sparked that fire because you carried that passion. So I have to imagine that's part of what your customers felt.
Yeah. I mean, when people ask us, we're like, this is it. This is what you want. This is what you're using. You know, it's not even ask. We tell people what they're going to use. It sounds so funny, right? But I don't ask any of my staff to sell. If you don't believe in any product we carry for whatever reason, don't sell it.
And that's the difference between what happened with the cannabis cultivation retail store reality. That's so different for any shopper that comes in that shopped and bought items and goods from any other store. Mm-hmm. When you compare the customer service that goes along with most stores, I won't say all of them are held to that same standard, but you know that there's a culture there and there is an appreciation and a love for the plant. So fellow growers, you know, we do share, you know, with like-minded people. We enjoy that part of it. Mm-hmm. And that is what makes a good hydro store.
Totally.
Is that customer service and not selling bullshit and actually, you know, helping the customer succeed. It's something that you taught me, you know, early on when I started working with Royal Gold was, you know, that's the best thing you can do is help your customer succeed. Sometimes mm-hmm. that's, you know, taking our advice, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's paving a clear picture of what's going to work for them in their reality, their experience, their grow scene, whatever mm-hmm. they got set up. You know, everyone's going to be different. Every scene's going to be different. And them being successful, that'll come back to you tenfold every time.
Totally. And when it does, they want to show you their crop. They want to share their flowers. They want to say, hey, look, I grew this with your products.
Yep.
And then you go see their garden. I mean, I was telling you earlier, like the craziest things from where we were gardens-wise, how people, certain people within the industry, you know, we had Asian influences. We had so many different demographics that were growers, and they all do things differently, right? There were gardeners that would literally fill rooms in a whole house just with dirt. And they'd have, you know, little old ladies shoveling pounds and piles of weed in the basement. There was no drying racks. This was a time when, you know, bud was, you know, structure, color. No one knew what a trichome was. It was just being pumped out like crazy. It didn't have to be dry. It had to, you know, basically you tie it in a knot just about because that was the market. And it was $3,200 a pound. It was a very, very crazy time.
And in the States during that time, because I started seeing Canadian cannabis in like 95, 96 is when I really started seeing it in Michigan, and it was sticky.
Yeah.
That's what people, they're like, oh, it's so good. You feel how sticky it is. I'm like, pretty sure that's wet. But, you know,
Alaska,
but it was
too.
Green. Yeah. And the other options were still, you know, south of the border, smashed, seedy, junk weed, or you knew
brown
two growers
brick.
That you could get like a quarter or an yeah. ounce from every 6 months. And, you know, you had your super head stash that you'd get every now and again. But like BC became the standard smoking yeah. bud. And it was really interesting to see that diversity and like wondering at the time, like, how are these people doing this? Like, there's some really good, but there was a lot of trash coming through too.
For sure there was, but I mean, what was the alternative? Mexican bricks with like shoelaces yeah. and shit in it? Like,
oh yeah.
That was your competition. So we shone.
It was the color game for me. That's what I remember standing out. You know, growing up in New York, I remember Jamaican weed came over at a really yeah. light fluorescent, almost color green,
yeah.
which was very different than Mexican bud. But yeah, with BC bud, you know, definitely when it's hitting that mainstream market at a beautiful live green, that was a game changer for a lot of people.
Now, so to me, I associate that elevation in quality of BC weed that happened between the late 90s and really when it kind of clamped down a lot harder in the mid 2000s, mm-hmm. you know, mid to late 2000s when the border got way tighter and
9/11,
it really
started.
That
was a really interesting time.
Then over the next 3 to 5 years, all those things came into place and it got a lot harder.
Yeah.
But the cannabis elevated significantly year to year to year to year.
I think every grower's had to up their game.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it again. There's a new evolution happening right now where if you're growing dubs, you're out of the game.
Yep. It's fire or nothing.
It's literally you have to bring the best. People are noticing the difference between LED and HPS lighting. They're, you know, we're seeing it again, a whole new evolution. of genetics, blending, hybridization. We're seeing a lot of really, but that's where you do the best growing is in the valleys.
Yeah.
And I don't mean growing, I mean evolving is in the valleys. And I always get excited. It sounds funny, right? Because if growers are having a hard time making it, so are the stores, so are the manufacturers, so is everything. There's just price compression across the board.
Yeah, it trickles down.
It does. And when that happens, we evolve. And, you know, we're even looking at now adding an element of renewable energy to our stores.
I love that.
Right? Like we're awesome. Looking at, you know, how do we evolve now in this space with respect to supply chains for food? Right? We're right in the smack dab in the middle of COVID. And getting certain products right now from other areas in the world, shipping's gone through the roof. Yep. How do we look at becoming more self-sustainable in respect to solar, wind, and hydroelectricity? Now we can look at tiny homes we're offering, incinerating toilets, you name it. The whole range of products that we can look at, how do we live more local, more sustainably, and grow our food locally, right? So we're looking at other avenues that we can now plug into our hydro shops.
Right, and we're in the hydro industry selling products. We sell soil, you guys are selling nutrients, but yet we're pushing regenerative agriculture.
Awesome.
You know, these are things that are like, it's counterintuitive. You sell soil, why would you push regenerative agriculture? Well, that's what these recipes were based on.
Totally.
That's what these concepts came as, is like, hey, let's kind of build a starter kit. Let's look at how nature builds regenerative soils.
I think it's
old
great.
Growth soils, and you look at the components and how to build fungus versus building bacteria. And these are concepts that weren't being applied to the products in the market 20 years ago, 30 years ago. So what valley and inspiration was it that kind of led you and your partner from just, all right, we're picks and shovels, we're selling the products, you know what? We're going to develop our own nutrients. We can do this as well as anyone. We have ideas for products that will help gardeners. Where did Green Planet come from that?
So we always come from a mentality of how do we do things better? Mm-hmm. So when it came to making a nutrient, I mean, we started early on, the sister company of P&W, the house brand, was actually GrowTech. GrowTech Nutrients, which, you know, Steve and his wife separated, and my business partner Steve, and, you know, GrowTech went that direction. P&W, we had 10 shops at the time, and that's when we started focusing on the retail. And then we looked at what the offering was in the marketplace for nutrients, and we said, you know what, we can do better. And GrowTech was a house brand, and we sold copious amounts of GrowTech. And one day, due to a dispute between ex-wife and ex-husband, we were cut off of GrowTech.
Oh, wow.
And that was, you know, that was a huge portion of our sales at the time. And we said, okay, you know, let's really, these things came, this forced us to evolve. Like I said, you know, the darkest hours sometimes are the best things that ever happen.
Sure.
You know, overnight we had to bring a nutrient line out. We looked at actually bringing in GH. We looked at, you know, starting up distribution. We said, listen, we need to be independent. We need to be in control of a nutrient line that's in-house and try to do it better than everybody else. And we have that mentality, we really do. And, you know, when your quest is to start making a better nutrient line, it evolves all the time. Because we have that grower first mentality, we're also trying to make something more concentrated, more complete than other products on the market. We've also reverse analyzed every product on the market. We can't sit here and say, you know, we make really high quality nutrients and not put in the work.
100%.
Right? So when you put the work in, when people have better success using their products, they call you up and say, holy shit, come check out my garden. I'm yielding better than I ever have. My inputs are less expensive. And then you go visit the garden, and all of a sudden, you get a video of it, and that video then goes viral or whatever it is, and then all of a sudden, Growing Exposed is born.
Right, which I love that kind of tie together, because that's a big part of, you know, us knowing each other and working through Green Planet, Royal Gold, and distribution of products. But, you know, we've come together through Growing Exposed as knowing some of the same farmers and seeing some of the same things. And I'm always blown away when I go into, you know, people that I really respect's gardens and they're having great success. And I start looking at their product cabinet and there's always a diverse mix, but there's almost always a Green Planet product. A lot of times it's massive. I see Medi One as an ingredient when it's a standalone one part medical fertilizer, but I see people using it as an ingredient in these secret recipes. And, you know, that's really inspiring to me to see the way that those products kind of change the way people garden.
Yeah. Well, we, you know, and Growing Exposed, like, literally was, you know, I take great pride in when people use our products. You know, it really makes me feel good because I believe they perform really, really well. And I think a bunch of our customers do too. So, you know, and then growing, like I was saying, and then Growing Exposed was born, and that was really the brainchild of Jeremy, who was one of my oldest friends. It's funny, right? I have business partners that have been with me, you know, as friends since grade six. Jeremy, I've known since grade six. You know, all these people that have, you know, David, the garden sage on Growing Exposed, owns the Kootenay market. He's incredible. He has such deep roots in the Kootenays, which is basically the Humboldt of Canada. It's very similar. They have a lot of similar mentalities and synergies. You know, the garden sage is a business partner of mine. He was my first hire.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
And I didn't want to hire him. I didn't. And he came back and he came back again. And I'm like, I can't hire you. You're way too, just, he was too square for the space.
Interesting.
Right? And he's like, no, I need to work here. This is where I'm going to be. And I was like, and it just became a thing that it was like, okay, forget it. You get a job, done. And, you know, we didn't do interviews. It was just like, go in the corner and clean up and bang, 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 you know, all day. And I walk back and I'm like, holy crap. This area is the cleanest area of the store I've ever seen. Come back tomorrow, right? And David has really poured his life into this industry.
That's so amazing. And we're going to get back and dig in harder on the Growing Exposed thing. And for those of you that are listening at home, you'll be getting glimpses of this in a different way. This is a really unique episode of Royal Grown Radio because we're actually co-episoding here with Growing Exposed, you know, kind of showing what we do, showing what they do, and just, you know, talking about the relationships. And that's the interesting thing to me that you were just touching on is how many of your current partners and, you know, basically your best friends and partners in the business are the people you've had relationships with for 20 plus years.
Yeah.
And it gets back to, once again, big up Fat Bowl, hustling with integrity. And those people that hustle with integrity tend to find each other and stick with each other.
Totally.
So, like, what evolved the path of, like, all right, so now you started the stores, had success, you're serving this crazy diverse community in Canada, producing cannabis to send across the border. I'm sure it was crazy, like, scary in some ways, because like it was here, they would follow people home from hydro stores and bust hydro store owners. Like,
all the time. I mean, there's many days I'd be driving home and it'd be like, I'd be watching the feds following a vehicle, you know, and it was my vehicle. And they were super covert about it. We for the first 15 years of business, I spent more time looking in my rearview mirror than my windshield. Right?
Right.
Like, they were really crazy times. And, you know, they'd come in, they'd try to, you know, I got some marijuana, I want to grow some. And it's like, you know what? I'm sorry, I have to stop you there. I cannot support and sell you something for cannabis. I'll tell you what, if you really want to grow, come back and see me tomorrow. and make sure we're talking tomatoes. But today I can't serve you because you've told me what you want to do is illegal. And for that reason, I cannot serve you today. I'm happy to serve you another time, but absolutely, I cannot serve you right now.
And that was something that didn't necessarily need to be talked about at a lot of stores. Like, you could definitely pick out the people that are totally fresh and new, mm-hmm. or the cop.
Yeah,
right.
Literally, we were looking for cops. You know? Right. It was crazy.
Right, most people, you know, just know better. Yeah.
Well, I got kicked out of my first hydro store.
Well, sure, so
that's
did
for
I.
Sure.
Exactly. Yeah. And what'd you do? Did you go back the next day, like he said?
It took me a week because it was a couple hours away from home. But yes, yep. And he was glad to serve me, and also scold me. And he's, you know, still in the industry. So it, right, you know, on. I see him occasionally when we're out in Michigan doing stuff, and I'm like, "Hey, man, you shaped me. Thank you.
Yeah,
for teaching me my P's and Q's.
Yeah,
yeah.
But those days were like we were sponges for any information.
But we're also developing mm-hmm. all these concepts and recipes, and you know, Botanic Care was hitting the market, Fox Farm was hitting the market. Those are the things that you know were changing us, and you were creating the germs of the idea for Green Planet and evolving. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's a part of this industry that is disappearing, and we need to tell and capture the stories, because a lot of people currently never experienced what we all did in those times. And I really want to make sure that people start to recognize, and it doesn't get lost in this, you know, scramble towards being the
new
biggest
world.
1,000-acre greenhouse yeah. producer.
Well, that's kind of the genesis of Growing Exposed, right? Is to highlight the culture, the gardens, the people. I mean, you know, it sounds so cliche to say growers are some of the coolest people I know, but they really are.
Absolutely.
And even in the legal scene, because obviously we're a few years into federal legalization in Canada, but you're still a maverick. You're still a bit of a rebel if you've still got 60 acres, or you might have deep roots within the space.
Right. Or even if you're brand new, even if you're just a businessman that's getting into the field now that it's legal and you're willing to kind of play that game. I mean, it still says a lot about who you are.
Totally.
You know, because it's not okay everywhere.
It's still a little taboo,
everybody.
Right? But
pretty much
early 90s, I knew.
Oh, it was taboo as fuck.
Yeah. Oh, it was taboo as fuck. You might as well sell them meth.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? But I knew because my parents were both hippies. We'd go over Salt Spring Island with my aunt, you know, they'd be blazing and, you know, and I was a little kid, I was, you know, and I knew it wasn't bad. I don't drink alcohol, I don't smoke cigarettes, because I know and I've seen the damage that those things do to society. Cannabis is not for everyone, but I've seen the medical benefits. We it's funny, right? You know, at first we got into it for profit, and then all of a sudden, you realize you're able to change people's lives for the positive. This was a chip in a chair for a lot of people I grew up with. This was an opportunity to, you know, we lower middle class is kind of the area I grew up in. And this was an opportunity for them to, you know, potentially buy a house, get out there, work. Yep. Sure, shit beat 7-Eleven, and guaranteed that, you know, for most people, there's very little hope. Right, so they're forced to do jobs like meter maids and cops and shit that they hate.
Yep.
You know, yeah. And I've always said, if you're not elated with your 5-year-old self, if your 5-year-old self can't fucking like be like, I am living a dream, you got to change what you're doing.
Yeah,
it doesn't. You know, we really have become complacent as a society with, well, that pays the bills. Da da da. I'll just, you know. Fortunately, I found cannabis. Fortunately, it's changed a lot of people's lives around me for the positive.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody, but mostly. You know, because even you can't help some people, right? Like, some people like get a stack of cash and all of a sudden they go wreck their life.
Well, they were most likely going to do that however they got their stack of cash.
Totally.
You know?
Now, on the medicinal tip, I love this concept. It's some, you know, older deadhead on tour, one of my first shows, told me about cannabis. And I'd already been around it for a long time and whatever. And, you know, at this time, you know, late 80s, it really hadn't been called medicine at that point. Really,
totally.
You know, I at least just hadn't been turned on to anybody using that as you know, as medicine. But, you know, he explained the concept of it being medicinal as people, as you know, medicine for the human race in general, not mm-hmm. a specific person for a specific ailment.
Yeah.
But more, and maybe he was just high on acid and talking out of his ass, but I definitely, he got my attention. And, you know, he broke it down with just the fact that it's a medicine that was provided by the earth to humans to help us adapt to the quick evolution that we're all experiencing. And I love that part.
Yeah, man.
You know what I mean? Like, we're growing
no,
and changing
true.
Way too fast when you look at the big scheme of things.
Yeah.
And this was to help us slow down and kind of grow into these massive changes as a species.
Yeah, no. Right? Well, listen, plant medicines, we're seeing what's happening with psilocybin now.
Yeah.
You know, we're seeing you know, how it's helping people with depression and mental illness and all these things, right? Like I said, your 5-year-old self has to be really proud of who you are, you know.
I love that. I'm taking that home with me tonight, man. I love that.
Yeah, like I can look myself in the mirror knowing that we've done the right thing, right?
Yep.
I was fortunate enough to also be involved in the Coalition Against Repeal in Canada. A dear friend of ours, Jason Wilcox.
Big respect to Jason.
Rest in peace, Jason. He came to me and he said, listen, I have an opportunity to take the federal government to court, and he gave me an opportunity to put the seed capital up so that we could change the laws in Canada so people could grow medically.
It's awesome.
Right? And fortunately, one, we had the funds and the wherewithal to start it. We got our whole team behind it. Other nutrient manufacturers took credit for it.
Shocker.
Which was really crazy. Like, they didn't get involved at all. But we're talking about big name nutrient manufacturers, big egos, and big dick swinging nutrient manufacturers. They were like, we're behind the coal. They didn't put up a penny. They didn't do a damn thing. But we really had an opportunity to be involved. And when you see someone crying because they're gonna have their plants taken away, and they have their own medicine, they have their strain for their own pain, and they're being told that, you know, you're gonna have to put it on your street corner with some cat litter and cut it down, and you're done come April 1st, because legalization's coming, you're gonna have to buy your weed through the legal means only. We couldn't sit back and watch that. It was unjust, and we really got behind that as a movement. And today you can grow medically in Canada, and I'm super proud that we had an opportunity to be involved in that. Unfortunately, Jason Wilcox is no longer here. And, you know, I think a lot of Canadians have a major debt of gratitude to that guy, because he actually was one of our first hosts on Growing Exposed. If you look back to the first season, he did Cannabis in Canada, and just a real maverick, a real trailblazer. And, you know, he didn't care. What mattered with Jason, he was very sick, and all that mattered is that he did the right thing and left a fingerprint on the planet saying, I did something good. And I'm grateful for knowing him. And, you know, we did something incredible there, knowing that we fought for people to be able to grow medically.
What an amazing accomplishment.
It's amazing, and he left a legacy behind, and it's really interesting. He was one of the first people that your whole team introduced me to the first time I came up to Canada to work with you guys, and I had no idea who he was or the impact he was having at the time and the work he was doing, and he explained a little bit to me about it, and we all owe him a debt of gratitude. And that's one thing that's a big issue here in the States. As each state goes legal, there are a ton of states that are really clamping down and trying to make medical caregiving illegal still. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Washington did it. All sorts of other states are really trying to stop anyone from being able to cultivate cannabis that isn't strictly regulated mm-hmm. by the government. And I think that's a horrible mistake. And all you people at home, you hear us talk about this sort of thing on the show all the time. Get involved. Please get involved. Yeah. Take a lesson from Jason Wilcox and follow that passion, fight it, because one person with a powerful heart and a strong voice can make a difference. Mm-hmm. So like, take that to the streets and fight for that right to cultivate your own medicine, because once that right disappears, it's way harder to get it back than it is to preserve it right now.
Yeah, it actually set a precedence for Canada, because Canada is the first federally legal country for all intents and purposes to go legal. And, you know, and the two systems can coexist. We can have large corporate cannabis. You know, there's a lot of people that hate it, but
it's going to exist.
It's going to exist. And, or you can grow your four plants recreationally, or you can grow your plants medically. The three can exist.
Sure.
The difference between cannabis and alcohol, though, you can make your own wine and beer. You can go and buy it from the store, but your wine and beer at home sucks.
Yeah.
Right?
So true.
When was the last time you had a home brew that's like, just that's delicious. It sucks. The beautiful thing about cannabis is you can get a nice genetic. You can throw it in the ground.
It's true.
Put a little bit of effort in, and you can actually grow some really good weed.
A decent time out.
Consistently, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
With brewing, you know, you could get that lucky batch.
Yeah.
But to try to do that again is really tough, where, you know, if you get a couple of the basics down, you can actually grow pretty consistent cannabis every time.
Totally.
That's one of the greatest things about being in this industry and working at trade shows is the first-time growers coming up. We just were doing a trade show in Wisconsin for the traditional garden industry.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you were saying, plant people are cool people. And the professional growers that are totally new to cannabis were like, I want to try this. Like, I'm in Illinois now. I can grow a couple plants. I want to do this. Like, where do we even start? And I'm like, get a good bag of soil, get a good simple nutrient setup, and follow the recipes on the bag to start. And you'll have success.
Totally.
And you'll want to do it again. Mm-hmm. And you'll go down the rabbit hole. You'll start like, oh, wait, that is good. I'm going to try a bloom booster next time. Ooh, I can add a rooting thing and I'm going to get bigger roots faster and my plant's going to be better structure and I'm going to get more buds off the same plant, but better quality. Like, follow that rabbit hole. I think it's great.
It's like golf. You know, you get that one shot and you're like, shit, I want to do that again. Well, I'm coming back again tomorrow.
Honestly, it's an addiction.
It truly is.
It truly is an addiction. I mean, this fires off when you're a young kid and you walk into a grow room for the first time. I can remember the first plants I saw growing under light. We were from BC, it's dark and rainy outside, and you walk into a grow room, it's summer. It's an endless summer, and it's like, then you trim it, you dry it, you sell it for a massive amount of cash. you go buy shit at the store with all this cash, you're like, this is crazy.
I never could have afforded this before.
The five-year-old inside of you is raging right now.
Five-year-old
shit
in his pants.
Yeah.
He's like, man, and my dad always said, you know, do anything long enough, you'll eventually get caught. So as a young kid, I knew that there was going to be an end to this, and I need to transition into making sure I stay in the straight and narrow legal. And that's when we said, let's start retail stores. And we grew stores.
Smart move.
And I was still attached to the growers. I was still attached to the industry, but without the same level of danger, without the same, you know, we were just a bigger target.
You mean people aren't coming to buy nutrients with an Uzi into your retail store?
No, not often, but
awesome.
You know, I mean, you know, that did happen in the early days.
Oh,
like, literally, you know, there were heavy individuals, you know, guys that would walk in the store with cigarette burns all over them, certain ethnicities, and in their culture, those burns meant to kill.
Like, oh, no way, really?
Yeah,
whoa.
Like really heavy, heavy, heavy people. So
you're like, can I count those before I decide to do business with you?
I'm telling you, like, and you know, it was just, you know, I'm just selling you fucking lights. I mean, just lax up a bit, but you know, it was a very crazy time.
Well, we heard a lot about this in the States, right? Like, I've heard a little bit from you in the years more recently, but our perception in the States, at least mine in Michigan, was that it was absolutely crazy in BC, that, you know, five out of every 20 houses on a block were growing. Mm. It was Hell's Angels. It was a whole range of ethnicity gangs going back to their mother countries. And, you know, and also, you know, these, which is kind of an oxymoron to me because all the Canadians I know are so polite, but like super hardcore thug Canadians, which I've never met one. I'm sure they exist, but.
Oh yeah, eh? just they'll go at you. No, no, listen, hey, the Canadians are all super nice. And it was a really interesting time, right? The media loved to get a hold of it and say, you know, this is all gang related. All this cannabis is gang related. It was Ma and Pa. It was, and I can genuinely say that, you know, the media would come in and do interviews with us.
You would know, you're selling them all
yeah,
your shit.
Listen, yeah, listen, the media would come in and do some interviews sometimes and we were really cautious on the questions they were allowed to ask. And they may take one snippet, you know, it'd be an hour long interview. And, you know, I remember David, the garden sage, the only snippet that they took out for the news was, how's business? And he literally had this shit eating grin going on his face going, good. That was all they took for the whole interview. And they were able to be like, this is tied to cannabis and oh, it's gangs. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? We talked about plants. We talked about, you know, not selling to cannabis. We talked about all these different things. We were super cautious on the narrative, and you still managed to pull something out. The media, you know, no different than COVID, no different than everything. We're in an era where information is so relevant and it's so full. Misinformation is through the roof, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to believe a narrative, you're going to find whatever information is to control that narrative. Yep. And it's really polarizing this time in our lives where we're seeing people segregating each other. And, you know, I don't subscribe to this camp or this camp. You know, let's just go with like vaccinated, for example, right? You've got the ultra unvaxxers, you know, you're going to die. It's the worst thing ever.
Microchips,
you know, the whole flat earth, the whole nine yards, right? And you've got the other guy over here. If you're not vaccinated, you deserve to die if you go to the hospital. You know, like, why the fuck do we have to have these two camps of morons? They're the same people, for fuck's sakes.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
let's bring it back to
let's
the
just,
middle.
Let's be here. Like, there is in every bit of, you know, good, there's a bit of evil, and every bit of evil, there's a bit of good, yin and yang, right? Why can't there just be, maybe this vaccine isn't the you know, silver bullet we were hoping for.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
Because if it was, it would work, and we wouldn't have to take boosters, not, you know, the 15th booster.
Right.
Exactly. For sure.
Like, but most importantly, haven't we learned from our past that let's be fucking nice to each other?
Yes.
The world's overpopulated.
Dealing with anything ununified is just,
yeah,
good luck.
Like, well, people need to stop being cunts to each other.
It's the primary tactic of power, yeah, is to divide the populace, and it's been that way forever. You get us to focus on our differences, and we forget how we're alike. And
totally,
we are so much more alike than we are different.
Yeah.
From all walks of life, we all want to eat a good meal with our family. We all want to sleep well at night.
Totally.
We all want a safe, warm bed. And we want to look out for our neighbors. And it's when it gets contextualized as, oh, these guys are preventing you from looking out for your neighbors.
Yeah.
You're pitting people against each other that never were against each other. And that's the thing that bothers me the most.
And both these camps need to smoke a little bit of weed.
A little bit.
And do a little bit of mushrooms.
Mushrooms, I think, will help.
I think will help, honestly. I think every world leader needs to do mushrooms. I think every, you know, and they genuinely just need to calm the fuck down and realize we're more alike than unlike.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I don't know if we're going to be able to tell the whole world and the reach of Royal Gold Radio.
We're working on it.
I'm hoping that a lot of people hear this because we need people to come together.
Big time. This is our opportunity to, like, right the ship.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a rough 2+ years for everybody. This is our chance.
Yeah.
To come together, support your neighbor in their choices,
yeah,
and recognize their choices may be different than yours, and that's okay. But support them and support their right to make their own choice.
Yeah, and back to where this started with misinformation. Mm-hmm. You know, that is honestly the only way really that I see getting out of it and getting away from all of us being like this. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, it is so easy to see how people can get wrapped up with a belief of the same topic just spun a different way. Mm-hmm. Just like you were saying with the media up there during the cannabis era, you know. I mean, you can listen to the same coverage from one news, you know, company to the next and see totally. It just delivered in a different way where, you know, you can be sold on both.
Yeah. I've never seen a time in my life where Susie Homemaker is an expert.
Everybody
on this
is.
Topic. Right? Everybody's an expert.
They all do research
they
all day.
They all do research. And it's really cool to do research. That's great. We all want to be informed. But I've never seen so many experts.
Right?
That on have a
never,
topic.
That have never read a peer-reviewed study.
It's on a topic.
I remember thinking the internet could be the savior because it would link worldviews. You know, everybody together.
Yeah.
It would be hard to keep the wool over people's eyes because it's just all going to be available. But obviously you can see the other side of that where it's just, you know.
Mass information.
Too much.
Mass and misinformation.
Yep.
It's really crazy. And I agree that, in a ideological world, wow, the internet could do this. It could align everybody's thoughts.
Yeah.
Where it's
I was waiting for my luggage at the carry-on luggage at the United Terminal a couple weeks ago, and they make you wait in the tunnel there. They're going to bring it up the stairs before mm-hmm. you go out to the gate. And every single person, I was all the way at the back of the line, and just every person on both sides of the wall, all the way down, every single person is just on their phone. And I'm like, man, that's just what we're doing, you know? Mm-hmm. 20 years ago, we might have been making friends with the guy talking about the flight we just got off of or where we're going next. And yet, every single, not one person except for the one kid that was there literally was like this, heads down, looking up every second for their bag to see if their bag's coming up and going right back to
anti-social
pretty
media.
Pretty sad. Mm-hmm. Even the bar, as you know, like traveling sales guys, you know, that we sit at a bar at a hotel and, you know, you watch a sporting event and get a drink. And man, it's just the days of meeting friends and chatting. There's times when I can sit there and I'm like, hey, look at a bunch of salespeople here just sitting at the bar with their phones out. Nobody's
it's
talking.
Really a bizarre
poor bartenders
time.
Too. They don't get any of the dirt anymore like they used to get.
Yeah.
Sad.
It's a very different world. And I think that's another important thing that cannabis really facilitates is connection among humans. And, you know, in this time of COVID, it's harder because we're not sharing cannabis among people like you used to. And, you know, it's more widely available, so you don't have to, like, share. Like, when it used to be, you smell the joint, you're like, hey, man, you mind if I get a puff off that? You know, and
or
if
blisters all over their lips, and you're like, I gotta take my
maybe
chances.
Not.
I'm gonna go with it.
Shit smells real good.
But it brings people together, and it gives them a
totally
a commonality that breaks the differences. You can be different in every walk of life, but you smoke cannabis, and the walls
you're
just
on the same team
fall
all of
away.
A sudden. Yeah, and that's what I really hope for Growing Exposed. I never thought that it would have the traction. It was never about let's get as many followers or, you know, it was just let's tell real stories about the industry and get excited about what we do. And I've never actually, this is funny, right? No one's ever asked me, where did I come from? What did I do?
And
right? I'm always asking the questions.
That's why this was such an exciting interview for me, because we've been friends for a long time and I haven't had an opportunity. Like, we're always doing business and at trade shows and having a great time and learning about each other, but not in this way. And so I'm very thankful to get to share this with people because it's true curiosity of mine. And I'm really excited to take a break in a few minutes. We're going to get Jeremy on here, who's one of the creators of Growing Exposed, the cameraman.
He is Growing Exposed.
The brain, the heart, the existence. And, you know, linking with you guys and having the opportunity to come along and watch you shoot some of the very first episodes and help participate a little bit, it really changed my perspective in seeing your passion and seeing Jeremy's passion for bringing it in an approachable way. Is a big part of what we're doing here at Royal Grown Radio. It's let's tell these stories. This is something that's meaningful and needs to happen now before the industry leaves the stories behind.
Yeah. It's funny, right? Like in an industry that you would think of is all inclusive, right? There's a lot of cunts that are that run their own channels, and they're like, they've got a lot of followers, and they've got a lot of, they're very inclusive, right? They're very like, they hold on to their information, they hold on to their channels, they don't want to collaborate. And when anybody ever comes to us, you know, we've always been like, yeah, let's do that together. I'm not thinking about, you know, how is this going to benefit me, or would my following be affected and pour over to you guys, or any of that garbage. It's all like, our industry should be together.
Sure.
But there's a lot of people that we've tried to open up to, big names in the space, that are like, no, I have 400,000 followers on my, you know, right. Channel, you know, and that's gonna benefit you more than me, and you know, my nutrient line won't succeed as much because people are gonna start buying your product potentially, and all this, that's just garbage.
Yep.
You know, Twister Trimmer just did a segment with us. Great BC brand, been around forever, and they just started a thing called Behind the Harvest, and they're like, hey, we're starting a show about growing cannabis, and you know, they asked us, do you want to be involved? I'm like, hell yeah.
Of course.
Why not? Why can't we all be on the same team and all elevate our game? We are genuinely fighting the same fight.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
on the same team.
I get excited about bringing them up. And Jeremy and I have always been a believer that there's enough pie to go around for everybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, we want people to get excited about growing. We want to show the biggest, craziest gardens. We want to show the tech behind the industry. We want to show all these things because that's what drives me. That's what gets me excited.
Yeah, for sure.
If there's a tidbit that every grow is different, if there's a tidbit I can take from a garden, I want to share that with all the growers to be like, this might benefit you. Like I said, we're grower first.
Yep.
Right? If there's something somebody's doing in this space that's getting them 3.5 pounds of light, what is it? What is that technique? We want to know so that we can share that, so that others can go out and do that. You know? So others can, on their channels, you know, say, hey, well, I learned this from this guy, or I did this. You know, it's really, but unfortunately, I don't know if it's a human nature thing, but some people are, you know,
selfish and competitive.
Selfish and competitive. You
and
know?
Just closed.
Me. Mm-hmm. Like, why?
Totally.
Like, I am a bit of a rare duck within the industry. I'm a retailer, a manufacturer, a wholesaler, a media company.
A documentarian.
A documentarian, or whatever you want to call it. I've worn a lot of hats and done a lot of things in this space. And I don't want to sit here and be like, ego. But I've just done a lot. You know, I've got 30 years just about in this industry. If I haven't done a lot, or I haven't shown some level of success, then I had to screw up royally.
Yeah.
I love Dennis Hunter, what he said. You know, I asked him, why? Why are you like just, you know, shooting for the stars and doing all these things? And he said, I could live 100 lifetimes and not have the opportunity that's available to me.
Yeah.
Right?
He's said similar things to me too. He's like, I can't help it.
Yeah.
I feel utterly compelled and I cannot stop until this battle is won.
Yeah.
And those are the freedom fighters that we all need to tip our hats to and channel just a little bit in our day to day.
He's a rad dude.
Yeah.
Like, certainly.
I've sat down and had heard of some of his stories and I'm like, holy crap.
Well, by the time this episode airs, we'll have an episode aired with Dennis telling some of the most crazy, outlandish, unbelievable, yet 100% true stories of the emergence of cannabis in Humboldt really exploding and like going from mom and pop small grows to like full on cultivation and Prop 215 and, you know, really the emergence of the industry that we see now. And wow, there are some doozies.
Yeah. You know, I mentioned earlier that we can come in here with some preconceived ideas of what we may talk about or want to talk about.
Yeah.
And hanging out with Dennis was definitely one of those where it just everything, we didn't touch on one of the things that we wanted to talk about.
It was mind-blowing.
All new and mind-blowing. And it was probably the quietest you'll ever hear Michael and I on our own podcast. We literally scrape our jaws off the floor when we were done.
Yeah. Like, that guy's got deep roots here.
And in the car on the way out of there, I'm like, all right, so here's our question list. Didn't ask that one, didn't ask that one, didn't ask that one, didn't ask that one. We may as well not even have written questions.
Yeah. It was the Dennis Hunter show.
What was even better is that as we were leaving, he was just like, so we're going to need at least two more of these, right?
Hilarious, right?
Yeah, we got up to like just about when he was getting ready to start Geopods.
That's hilarious.
Right? Yeah. So a lot more to go. Speaking of a lot more to go, I think we're going to take a couple minutes, chat. We're going to get Jeremy out from behind the camera and over here to join us and tell some of the story about how Growing Exposed came to be what it is, how it developed from just a little bit of an idea to where we all sit today. And thanks for listening. You can check us out at royalgrownradio.com on all of your major podcast platforms. You can find us on YouTube. You can find Growing Exposed on their channel at YouTube, growingexposed.com. If you like it, click on, subscribe, take a minute and listen to the other episodes. There's something here for everyone. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. This is Justin from Green Planet and Growing Exposed. You're listening to Royal Grown Radio. Feel free to check me out on my Instagram. It's Grow Green Planet, and thanks for listening.